This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. First the violins, then the violas, the cellos, and the double bass. Each instrument gradually fading in to tune to the key of A major. That's a familiar sound for the 65 full-time professional musicians that make up the North Carolina Symphony. This week, the symphony started their Holiday Pops concert tour, making stops in Statesville, Lincolnton, and Wilkesboro. Next Thursday, the orchestra will be in downtown New Bern. David Lewis has played the tuba in the North Carolina Symphony for almost 40 years. He spoke to me from the road Thursday afternoon.
We are in Hickory. We played in High Point Tuesday night, two concerts in Statesville yesterday, two concerts in Lincolnton today.
Lewis is also the tour manager for the symphony. He says every year they log about 14,000 miles on charter buses they use to travel around the state.
We're a group that works together so much and travels together so much. It is really a close-knit community. And I think that's one of the things that keeps the orchestra fresh for all of the people, because we know everybody so well and work together so easily. It makes for a great relationship.
The North Carolina Symphony has been performing across the state since 1932 and is celebrating its 80th season. According to Lewis, this season has been busy. He says the symphony performs 175 shows each year, but New Bern is one of the favorite stops.
Enthusiastic audience and just great people to play for. It's also far enough from Raleigh that we always come down early enough that we have dinner in New Bern, and there are lots of great restaurants. So everybody likes those New Bern trips.
The North Carolina Symphony has made plenty of stops recently in eastern North Carolina, playing for Beaufort County's 300th celebration in September, as well as a Holiday Pops concert in Jacksonville the day after Thanksgiving. Senior Director of Statewide Development, Rob Madry, says the symphony has a lot of support in the eastern part of the state.
And for us to be able to come not only to New Bern, but to other communities in the PRE listening areas, such as Morehead City, Washington, North Carolina, and Jacksonville, who are places we've been to very recently, it is a privilege and an honor to be able to provide a quality orchestra with some of the highest artistic standards that you'd find in any orchestra anywhere in this country to these communities.
The North Carolina Symphony also performs for elementary schools, holding 40 education concerts across the state each year.
We provide a one-hour performance for children in either grades 4 or 5. These one-hour concerts are centered on the theme of what makes music music, and it's a way of introducing the orchestral world, the repertoire, to students of this age.
The first education concert was in 1943. In addition to playing as a full orchestra, Madry says they also teach children the concepts of melody, texture, dynamics, rhythm, and tone by having musicians demonstrate their instruments individually and with the accompaniment of other instruments in the same family.
We hope that many children will be inspired to want to pick up an instrument, whether it's a member of the family, the orchestral family, like a violin or a cello, or perhaps to want to play euphonium in a marching band or clarinet. We are hoping that we will inspire this love of music for years to come just by this one simple introduction into their lives of what orchestral music is.
From generation to generation, classical music from the symphony has continued in North Carolina, but not without challenges. The financial stress during the recent recession caused some symphonies around the nation to shut down. Senior Director of Statewide Development Rob Madry says the North Carolina Symphony was forced to look at ways to reduce expenses and trim spending.
Unfortunately, we asked musicians to take a cut of 5 weeks of work off their schedule in 2009, and we were, because of that sacrifice from the musicians and some salary cuts from the staffing as well, that really significantly helped, but not us to reduce our debt load and the financial crunch that we suffered in 2009.
The North Carolina Symphony is funded by state dollars and donations from individuals, corporate sponsors, and foundation members. They also bring in money from ticket sales. The North Carolina Symphony offers many free concerts throughout the year, including the Summer Pops Concert Series, which made stops in Tarboro, New Bern, and Jacksonville. The Symphony also performed 3 free concerts on Independence Day. On Thursday, they'll perform in downtown New Bern for their Holiday Pops Concert. Madry says the program provides a mix of traditional carols, orchestral work, and the popular Christmas carol sing-along.
It begins with Angels We Have Heard on High, a perennial favorite carol for many folks. But then it bleeds into a piece called March for the Toys and Babes in Toyland. There is a piece that William Henry Curry will conduct that's called Russian Christmas Music, pretty much a collection of Russian carols arranged for orchestra, but I think it's going to bring a smile to many folks' faces, and then the first half ends with selections from the Nutcracker that everybody will know and love.
The Holiday Pops concert takes place next Thursday, December 13th, at 7:30 p.m. at the New Bern Riverfront Convention Center. If you'd like more information, go to publicradioeast.org. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. This is the Downeast Journal. During the holidays, many of us are using more energy, from heating our homes to lighting our Christmas tree. But there are some simple things you can do to save energy and money. Stephen O'Connell spoke with the manager of the Green Travel Program at the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources about ways you can go green this holiday season.
My first question concerns the benefits of getting a live tree versus the benefits of getting a fake one, if you think one outweighs the other.
Well, if you purchase a live tree, of course, you're going to have some environmental impact either way if you choose a live tree or an artificial tree. Of course, you can use the artificial tree over and over, year after year, whereas with the live tree, you can recycle that. So you can take it to a composting place that will take that, use it. It can be used as artificial reef in lakes, can be ground up for mulch, or even you could stand it out in your yard and put treats on it for the birds.
How about wrapping papers? What are some of the alternative ways to wrap presents? Is the traditional paper we buy at stores eco-friendly?
Some of the inks that are on the traditional wrapping papers may not be so sustainable. However, some people, and I've done this myself, have used old comics or some other festive colored papers to wrap gifts in. Of course, the newspaper is always recyclable, so you can take that to your recycling center or put it in your recycling bin for your curbside pickup.
Any other suggestions?
One innovative thing I have heard of is giving someone a scarf where you wrap the gift in the scarf and they can use the scarf and the gift as well. So you have a double gift there. So it is reusable and a nice handy thing to have.
What about when it comes to house decorations during the holidays? I've heard about people using fruits, nuts, and live pine cones as an alternative for adding the color they want in their homes. Do you think this is a good idea?
Yes, I totally agree with you that using organic decorations are the better choice. Of course, if you buy plastic decorations and those types of things, there may be some off-gassing from the chemicals that were used to manufacture that. A lot of those are imported and from countries that may not have such an eye on the environmental aspects of what they're producing. But I definitely recommend using organic things like the pine cones, the fruits and nuts. Even have your children make things from cans and bottles that are recyclable and make those types of decorations.
Mr. Rhodes, is there an alternative for the lighting that most of us use for our homes?
I would highly recommend the use of LED lights. Those are light-emitting diodes, and they use much less energy. You could use those in a menorah or a Christmas tree or house lighting. And when it comes time to replace your lighting, I would definitely say that is the better option because it conserves so much energy.
Would you explain for me how the LED lights work compared to the traditional bulbs?
Standard bulbs are incandescent bulbs. They use a filament that is, you run electricity through. It creates a lot of heat and also uses a lot of energy, whereas the LED is a diode, which does not use near as much energy and produces much less heat, so it is much more energy efficient.
The old bulbs, the ones that don't work anymore, do you recycle those?
No, those are not recyclable. Those have to be disposed.
Some of us have the tendency to leave the lights on when we go to bed or leave the house. Any advice?
Perhaps put timers on your lighting. Don't let them burn day in and day out. You can maybe cut back the hours that you're lighting your home. That may save you some energy.
Mr. Rhodes, share with us, if you would, any more ideas you have about keeping the holidays more energy efficient.
Of course, when you think of Christmas, you always think of batteries because there are so many toys that use batteries and gifts that use batteries. We recommend that you buy rechargeable batteries. The longer lasting ones, the better. And you can recharge those, use them over and over and over again. There are so many other things that you can do to help reduce waste over the holidays. Like greeting cards, you can make greeting cards out of other things that you may have around the house. Have your children make those greeting cards from older cards and other things like that.
Mr. Rhodes, I appreciate you sharing your time with us. Enjoy the holidays.
Thank you for calling. Take care now.
The Downeast Journal is made possible by our members in partnership with Crystal Coast Civic Center, Moorhead City, where every event is waterfront, business meeting, and special event facilities available. Crystal Coast Civic Center, 252-247-3883.
Hello, I'm Tom the Jazzman, inviting you to join me this Sunday evening right here on PRE, Public Radio East, from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock. We always have some new, exciting new artists. We also revisit many of the great artists that made jazz so famous. It's America's art form, and we deserve to support it. It's right here on Public Radio East on Sunday evenings from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock. I'll see you on the radio.
And this Sunday night, it's a tribute show to Dave Brubeck.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. I love things that are compact and efficient. When we designed our house, it took 2 years to finish drawing because I kept trying to make it smaller. I like small appliances that do multiple things. And nothing thrills me more than packing for a 2-week trip in one carry-on. So what does this have to do with gardens, you might wonder? Well, I feel the same way about everything relating to my garden. My vegetable beds are 4 foot by 8 foot on the outside. So since they have 6-inch timbers supporting them, they're smaller inside. And I have vegetables in only 3 of those. and I grow hundreds of pounds of vegetables each year, much more than we can possibly ever eat. The gardens right now are bursting at the seams. And what about hens? You know that I have four right now. But think about it. With only two hens nestled somewhere in your garden, you'll be able to harvest at least 375 eggs a year. Isn't that amazing? And what about two apple trees or two peach trees? Bushels and bushels of fruit from a small, compact space. And something people tend not to think about. How about changing your lawn to a small, compact space? Just enough for what you actually use the lawn for. Do you have a dog that plays catch? Well, how about a long, narrow lawn where you can throw the ball and he or she can retrieve it? Or a small area by the front porch, just to look attractive as guests walk up to the house. Maybe a round bed in the middle of the yard with a round lawn that goes around it for your children or grandchildren to walk around or play. Maybe a small square somewhere for a soccer goal. But think in terms of a lawn that's just the right size for your actual lawn purposes. Then you can use the rest of the area for trees and shrubs, things that take much less care and much fewer herbicides and insecticides, much less watering throughout the season, things that are a little bit greener in the green part of your yard. This is a great time to look at your yard and reassess your lawn needs. If you spend parts of the summer hating your yard, if you look out and dread going out in the heat to mow, if you can't stand the sight of those weeds popping up in your well-maintained grass, or if you're tired of paying maintenance fees for irrigation, well, think about it. Why is it exactly that you have the yard? If it's not giving you joy, well, then it's time to change it. Go to a nice, compact area of lawn, put the rest in beautiful shade trees, and start 2013 with a new yard that you might love. And if you're traveling this holiday season, see if you can't pack in one carry-on. It's really not that hard if you think about it a little and put your mind to it. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Singing carols, gift giving, and decorating Christmas trees. These are traditions that some of us celebrate. But people living in the 1800s observed the holiday season very differently. This week, we spoke with Living History Programs Coordinator at Tryon Palace, Matt Arthur, about what Christmas time was like in colonial North Carolina.
Christmas celebrations would follow a lot of the English Christmas traditions, which involved a lot of partying, a lot of horse races, dancing, all sorts of things like that.
Another English tradition that migrated to North Carolina is preparing seasonal food. Arthur says very little is known about the traditional holiday meal, but they have an idea based on recipes that were handed down.
One of those is a Christmas porridge, which is made with bread, beef broth, plums, and prunes, and all sorts of spices. And the other one is it's one known as a Yorkshire Christmas pie, which involves quite a lot of game. There's actually a pigeon, a partridge, a chicken, a goose, a turkey, rabbits, and then other game birds, and 4 pounds of butter. But it's a large version of a very common game pie. We also know they would have been doing, sweet things. Gingerbread was popular. It wasn't just a Christmas thing. It was something you found year-round. Ice cream was a winter treat because we actually have ice to make it with, as well as cakes, what we think of as cookies, and tarts and those sorts of things.
Today, we delve into the holiday food traditions of the Inner Banks of North Carolina with our three-week series called Just Desserts. Food writer and restaurant critic Eddie Browning shares his recipe for Inner Banks pecan brownies.
Going back into the 1700s, a lot of wonderful things were dropped off at our ports that you couldn't get in parts of Virginia and the northern colonies. Cocoa was pretty much used in the colonies early. These are all items that would be pretty much available in your port cities and then on your farms in general.
So this is a recipe that people living in eastern North Carolina a long time ago would actually have eaten.
Oh, yes. I think you'll find that these brownies are the best that you've ever tasted.
All right. Well, how do we get started?
Start off by preheating your oven to 350 degrees. Brush a 9 by 13 inch baking dish or pan with butter. Then in a saucepan, melt the 1 cup of butter over medium heat. Add the sugar and stir to dissolve.
And I should mention, too, that is 2 cups of sugar.
Now keep that warm. In a bowl, whisk together the flour, cocoa, baking powder, and salt.
So basically add the dry ingredients, get them incorporated, and next would probably be the wet ingredients, right?
Oh, yes. Add the butter mixture, add the eggs, vanilla extract, chocolate, and nuts. Stir until the chocolate is fully melted and the ingredients are combined.
And I'm guessing that the heat from the melted butter mixture is going to help melt the chocolate.
Oh, yes. You'll notice that the batter should be very thick. Don't let that bother you. You can mix the batter in a heavy-duty mixer, which will save your arm a little from being worn out and tired.
You know, Eddie, I bet these make great Christmas presents.
They're chunky, they're loaded with chocolate and wonderful pecan flavor. And I thank you and your family, and if you give them as gifts, the recipients of the gift will thoroughly enjoy it.
Well, I guess it's about time to put these brownies in the oven, right?
Spoon the batter into the prepared pans, smooth at the top, bake until it's set, which should be about 25 to 35 minutes. Remove to a rack to cool, cut into pieces, and serve.
Of course, that's my favorite part, eating the brownies. This recipe sounds like it's simple enough that anyone could do it.
You don't have to be a gourmet cook. It's something that a novice can pick up. Get your children involved. Bring them into the kitchen and help make these. It's not difficult. You don't have to worry about them falling like you do some cakes. It's just a matter of following the instructions. And having your ingredients at room temperature is the best instruction to follow.
Why do you want your ingredients to be at room temperature?
It helps by increasing the volume. Like a lemon at room temperature will produce more juice. Same way, eggs at room temperature will produce more froth and more volume.
Well, Eddie, thank you so much for sharing these tips and your recipe for Interbank's pecan brownies. If you would like to see the recipe, you can visit our website, publicradioeast.org. And join us next week for our second part of our short and sweet series, Just Desserts, as we share with you the recipe for Interbank's butter cookies. This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. If you're a fan of classical music, there's the Holiday Pops concert in downtown New Bern next week. But if you enjoy opera, well, there's good news for you, too. The 2013 season of the Metropolitan Opera is starting this afternoon with A Masked Ball. That's just one of 23 operas airing every Saturday afternoon between now and May on Public Radio East. Music director Sefton Wiggs has more on this year's lineup.
Thank you, Jared. Well, the Metropolitan Opera starts again this week, December 8th at 1 p.m., and most of the operas will be at 1. You should check the listings because there are some that start early because, well, some of them are long. We'll use some Wagner later in the season, so that'll be long ones. A Masked Ball by Giuseppe Verdi is the starting opera this week. It's about murder and intrigue in Sweden, not Verdi's native Italy. It stars Marcello Alvarez as the king. The wonderful baritone Dmitri Horostovsky is in this program as the count. This season is heavy on Verdi. There'll be later on Aida, and that's next week, the following week. Il Trovatore is coming up by Verdi. Also Rigoletto later in the season. On December 22nd, just before Christmas, Rossini's Barber of Seville, and that'll be performed in English this year, so that'll be nice for the Christmas season. Late in the season, one of my very favorite operas from the 20th century is The Dialogue of the Carmelites by Francis Poulenc, and that'll be coming up in May. by the French composer Poulenc, and that is a very, very moving opera about a group of nuns who were executed during the time of the French Revolution, and it's a beautiful music, a sad story, the very beautiful music that will be coming up. And as I mentioned, there'll be Wagner later in the season with April 6th, starting with Das Rheingold and the Valkyrie and Siegfried, all by Wagner in successive weeks. And a opera from the Baroque as well, Julius Caesar by Handel, will be coming up in April. So a variety of music, as usual, with the Metropolitan Opera. And we hope you'll enjoy them all here on PRE, Public Radio East.
If you'd like more information on the Metropolitan Opera's 2013 season, visit our website, publicradioeast.org, and click on the Programs tab.